RDI Insights, Mike Dempsey in conversation with Royal Designers.
My guest today is Seymour Quast, one of the giants of graphic design and illustration. His work is known around the world, and in 1954, along with designers Milton Glaser and Edward Sorrell, he started Pushpin Studios in New York, where they set about disrupting the status quo of the world of design and illustration, with an eclectic and individual approach by plundering Art Deco, Victoriana, and Egyptian styles, but always with a contemporary twist. Their work quickly became the antidote to the clean-line Swiss modernism approach increasingly embraced by the creative communities in America. Within a few years, they attracted more like-minded creatives to join the studio. At their height, they were over 20 strong, and collectively their work spread far and wide, covering an array of projects, from record sleeves, books and posters, to corporate logotypes, font design, magazines, and packaging. Seymour turned 90 this year and still maintains a daily routine of work, whether it's at his New York loft or his country home in Connecticut. What is clear in this interview is that Seymour is a man of few words and very modest about his successes and the many accolades he has received over his long career. He was born in the Bronx area of New York City in 1931. At a young age, the family moved to Saratoga Springs, 187 miles from New York. This interview with Seymour Quast was recorded remotely, with me in Dorset and Seymour in New York. I asked him about those early days in Saratoga, what it was like, and the sort of influence it had.
Quite a big change, going from the city to the countryside. Yeah. Did you find that inspiring? I mean, the landscape, the buildings, the...
Oh, in Saratoga?
Yeah.
No, the only interesting part was the water. People came in the summertime, take in the waters and the horseback riding, the races.
So when did the real creative urge start to kick in?
Yeah, it didn't kick in Saratoga Springs because there was nothing there in the way of art, my teachers or anything that really inspired me. But when we moved back to New York, we moved to Brooklyn, where I went to high school with a man who practically invented graphic design. He wrote a book on graphic design, came from Germany. His name was Leon Frenn. I learned a lot about poster design, especially from him.
He was sort of your mentor in a way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And so from there you went on Cooper Union.
I was lucky to get into highly competitive, a free school.
A lot of great people went through that school. I think you met quite a number of your future colleagues there, didn't you?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Was Milton there, Milton Glaser?
Milton was there. Ed Sorrell was there. Randall Ruffins was there. And we all.
You were there in 1951. Just give me a glimpse of the creative world in 50. This is before the Madman era, you know, when the great ads started to come out. I guess probably like in the UK, it was very much more like commercial art studios, sort of jobbing studios, or maybe you were more advanced. America was always more advanced, certainly in advertising. We were always dragged behind over here.
Yeah, I worked for one advertising agency until I was fired after about 2 or 3 months, which was a little bit of madman because the agency was divided into half, the art part where we could work in our shirt sleeves and the business part where I had to put on a jacket and a tie in order to visit the executives. That was my only agency experience.
I think you had a few jobs, didn't you, before you actually ventured on your major own pathway?
Yeah, the New York Times was my first job, and it was great because I was able to do funny drawings along with setting type and doing small ads, promotion pieces.
It was their promotion department, right? So that gave you a sort of a view of typesetting and typography and the combination of image and type as
yes.
well with your drawing.
I was able to draw it and lay it out, and that was unusual.
You would have been about what, in your early 20s then?
Yeah.
Then you went into advertising, you were just saying, for a short while.
Well, I went off thinking I should advance. I went to Esquire magazine because I was just in a bullpen. This was before it changed over into to a more modern magazine with Henry Wolfe.
And then George Lois after him, wasn't it? George Lois later. I heard you talking a little bit about the lament of magazines, and I couldn't agree with you more. The way that the commercial pressure now has turned most magazines, and certainly all the covers, into a kind of schlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really the sales department doing the design rather than any designers, it seems to me. Tell me about the formation of Push, how you all came together and decided that maybe this would be a good idea.
Well, I think for our second year at school over the summer, I got together with Milton and Reynolds and formed a studio called Design Plus. We went looking for work and got one job, which was to produce placemats for a department store. And Reynolds did a beautiful drawing for it, and we screened it on these cork placemats. We sold it, and that was our only job, and then we went out of business when we went back to school. And when we got out of school, still in school, we had a studio to hang out, to bring our girlfriends. We were able to do our homework.
So the early days of Pushpin, how many were you? Eventually, there were about 20 of you, weren't there?
Staff.
I have to tell you that when the 1970 touring exhibition, Pushpin exhibition, was in Europe, it stopped off in London.
At Reed House.
Exactly, yes. And I went to that exhibition and was utterly blown away, along with all of the various young guys that I knew at the time, because we were all, you know, Britain was always slightly in between. In other words, the Swiss style and the grid, the whole grid system, and what was going on in America. And because you had to wait for kind of delayed gratification, in other words, you had to wait for the annuals to come out to see really what was going on, or the occasional magazine. These days, you can see whatever anyone's doing within seconds of them finishing it. But then you waited and bought a rather expensive, you know, either the American Illustrators Annual or the Art Directors Club book. This would be before we had DNAD in this country. But I remember going to that Reed House exhibition, having been in the studio doing Range Left Helvetica in a grid system, and it was like the circus had arrived in town for me, because it was just so exuberant with so many styles and so much colour and so much wit and fun that I came out of there a changed person. Not only me, but I think many hundreds of people went through that exhibition in London, all the young designers. And within weeks, you could see the effect, the Pushpin effect, how it was.
Really?
Yeah, it was. It really changed. It sort of derailed the traditional modernists, of which there are still many, and they're very good. But as a designer myself, I never wanted to really be trapped in what would be called a grid. They talk about breaking out of the box. Well, I just wanted to break out of the grid. And that enabled me and many others to do that. So, you know, I personally thank you for that, because you were a big part of that liberation.
We didn't like the grid, and we didn't like Helvetica.
I know that. I can tell. So did you, in terms of your approach to illustration, which is clearly conceptual, even though there is a sort of, I've always looked at it and thought, well, there is a conscious naivety, but with great sophistication. And it deviated so much from what was going on in America in the 50s. And I know you've said yourself that you didn't want to go down the route of status quo, of sort of representational illustration. I got the 1963 Illustrator's Annual, and it's got so much of your work in it. And you can see the change throughout the book with Ben Sharn and André François and Tommy Ungerer, you, Isidor Seltzer, Saul Steinberg, you know, lots of illustrations that had ideas. They were not just decorative, man and woman sitting on a couch drinking something. And I know you were critical at one point of Norman Rockwell, but then you later, when he...
I changed my opinion. Well, I always respected his talent. It was so great. But then he added that element to it.
This touring exhibition in London, in the front, there is a photograph of 20 of you. And I think you mentioned earlier about staff, but I wonder whether any of these were staff. They all seem to be like illustrators to me.
Well, illustrators or designers.
I don't differentiate between the two. I think I see you as a designer who uses illustration to pursue their ideas, rather than
that.
And looking at this book, both you and Milton have the lion's share of work. So your output must have been phenomenal, and your success must have been phenomenal at that point. Were they all in the studio, or did they all have their own studios? How did that work? How did Pushpin work?
Well, in the beginning, there were just three or four of us. Then we sort of, when work came in and we needed help, we hired people. And then Paul Davis came, Isidore Seltzer, and others came along, and then Jim McMullen. And then they left after they got what they wanted, what they needed from Pushpin, and other people came along. I have to say, we had the advantage here because we like to draw. We like to do images along with our interest in topography and graphic design generally. That's pretty much unusual, and I think that's gone. I think everything is together now. And then right now there are fewer images, mostly design has taken over, and topography has become king. But that's for the advantage that we had when we were younger and just starting out. So we could do our own posters and do our own book jackets and do packaging and whatever.
And
complete.
And fantastically well, too. And lots of lovely album covers.
Oh, yes.
You know, when they were 12 inches, of course. I heard the other day they're now thinking of stopping even CDs.
Nothing. All right.
No, it'll just be streaming.
But vinyl is coming back.
It's quite big business over here. But nothing like the streaming services where they can almost predict what you enjoy and then offer you a whole range of things you might not have heard. It's kind of like they're in your head. A lot of the illustrators, like Paul Davis, who I was a great fan of, blossomed in Pushpin and then set off. Almost like they were using Pushpin as a sort of stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
How did it work on a business level? Were they employed, or did you just get a fee for the illustrations and commission?
Ezra left after a year and a half. Went off to freelance his illustration. And Milton and I generally ran the studio together. Renald Ruffins came on as sort of a partner for a while, and then he left. I think we figured out that 4 years was about the average stay for anybody at Pushpin, illustration or design work.
Right, okay.
Everybody else was on staff.
And then, of course, Milton in 75 set off, long after 4 years, of course. But was that a big separation for you? Because you must have been very close.
He moved upstairs to New York Magazine, which was on the top floor of a little building. So that was okay. No, we ended friends. He was the best partner I've ever had. He was great.
I'm sure that you inspired one another. That shows very much in the work. It's almost like, did you ever feel that you were in competition with each other? Or was that a friendly sort of thing?
Yeah, a friendly competition. Yeah. We sort of collaborated on assignments where we'd get together and we'd do sketches, and finally the one who did the best, get the best idea would be the one who would follow through on it and have to do the work.
I remember Alan Fletcher telling me when they started Fletcher, Forbes and Gill in London, they had a secretary that just seemed to polish her nails for most of the morning, and then a Penguin book cover would come in and they'd argue who was going to do it. So he said it was they'd just sit there twiddling their thumbs waiting. And I think it wasn't someone that came over from the States that knew Bob Gill from an advertising agency that started to get them work from advertising, and then they were kind of off. It's funny when you think of people like Alan Fletcher not having any work and arguing over a book cover that was going to earn them £30.
Right. Oh, yeah. We got a lot more for book jacket.
And you did some beautiful book covers. I mean, I look at them still today. I mean, I worked in publishing for 10 years myself, and as an art director of hardback house and then a paperback house, and you know, I've got a great love of book covers, and some of those American early book covers that you were responsible for, and Milton with his Shakespeare series, and many others. I mean, other American designers as well. It was
hardcover and paperback.
Yeah, terrific. Really, really good. I was going to ask you about one of the posters that I always admired, and I've got it in my studio in London, and it's been there for a couple of decades, and it's that great example of your approach, and that's for the Writers New York City Source. I'll describe it for listeners. At first glance, you see people and cars milling around at the foot of a skyscraper, and it's a beautiful range of colours, but when you look again, you realise that the skyscraper is a giant pen. And that's, for me, that's the really a mark of how you work. I think you obviously have a design problem to solve, and you are looking for the idea. You're looking for that little spark, and that one is a perfect example. How you worked then, were you colouring those all in yourself? I mean, they all hand done.
I think that was done with stuff that Celotac.
Yeah, I remember Celotac, yeah.
With flat colours.
Yeah, so that would mean sticking down and scalpeling around the edges very carefully,
right. Yep.
Making sure you don't tear up any of the black line.
Right. I had a couple of assistants doing that stuff.
You just tell them what colors, and they'd put the Celotac.
But we'd also change it. If we don't like it, we could change it. Opposed to doing watercolors, which I could never do because I knew I couldn't make any changes here, that I was feeling necessary.
It seems to me then that the digital age, which disrupted so much and helped so much in equal measures, really. First of all of the comp houses, you know, the typesetting companies went to the wall almost overnight. Mm-hmm. And then everybody had to become a typesetter, and it was hopeless because you see some dreadful typography because nobody knew about line endings, nobody knew about closing things up, all those classic things that would be done automatically by good compositors when you'd send off your repro. And slowly they've had to learn that. So the poor old typesetters, you know, all went to the wall. But also it meant that no more, we called it cowgum over here. I think you called it cement, didn't you? Was it not called that?
The glue? Rubber cement, yeah.
Rubber cement, that's right. None of that. No more bits of repro stuck on your elbows when you got home, all that sort of stuff. And your work, so I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, but the work that you now produce, is that all done on the computer? Do you scan in your black and white drawings and then colorize them on screen?
Exactly.
Although I noticed that I saw a little film fairly recently, within certainly the last 5 years, where you were showing either a lino cut or a woodcut of a face that was for a magazine. Mm-hmm. And so you're still doing physical carving into pieces of wood or lino to do a print.
Yeah, I love doing woodcuts.
With most people, their style is instantly recognizable. Yours is to a certain extent simply because of the amount of time you've been here with us working. But when you look further, you've got such an enormous variation of styles that you've produced over the years. Is that out of boredom, or you just like, you're curious to try something out, see whether it works?
Well, the things I can't do.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do realism. I can't do that. The kind of work that Paul Davis can do. I just don't have the hands and the mind for that. But otherwise, I mean, it's only a technique, whether I do something in woodcut or do a drawing, it's basically the same drawing. It's only what happens to it after drawing is done, whether it ends up as a woodblock or just a drawing as it is.
When you go to Connecticut, you carry on drawing there. You carry on working there when you're there. So you just don't stop, Seymour.
Well, what else am I going to do? I don't play golf.
Do you have any other burning interests? I mean, you know, I don't know, opera, theatre, whatever. Do you
old movies?
Old movies that you watch on TV.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Looking at your list of awards, you're a member of Alliance Graphic International and have been since the 70s. You were inducted into the Art Directors Hall of Fame in 83, received the AIGA Medal in 85. In 92, you were honorary doctorate of fine arts at Parsons School of Design, and 2005, you became a Royal Designer for Industry, given by the Royal Society of Arts in London. And in 2010, you became an honorary PhD at Rhode Island School of Design. That's impressive. Do you ever have to go to these organizations and, I guess, give talks occasionally, or maybe crit, maybe not? I don't know.
It's nothing to do. I mean, I've talked at schools that don't give me anything, and then I've not talked at schools that have given me these honors. It's a mix.
You're married to Paula Scher, of course, who's the Pentagram partner, and she, in her own right, does a lot of personal work.
Yes.
And she does the maps, of course, which have become, I think, very popular with various people. Huge labor of love to do them. And I know that you married twice to her, and then you divorced and you remarried, I think, had a joint exhibition called Double Portrait, where both you and Paula had your work at the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And that must have been very special for you.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. We each had two walls to exhibit our work on. Otherwise, we can't collaborate.
You can't?
No.
What do you mean? You can't because you argue?
We'd be at each other's throats.
Oh, you would. Because I was going to say, well, did she help with maybe something as simple as how the caption should look?
Yeah.
She
I
did.
Leave that up to her.
And was it in Helvetica?
Of course not.
I'm joking. And I noticed that in the season of Mad Men, one of your posters popped up on the wall, which was terrific. I mean, they did seem to go out of their way in that series to get things right. Did you watch the series?
Oh, yeah.
What was your view of the art direction?
The art direction?
Well, you know, in terms of the period, details, costumes, furniture.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great.
They really did.
We were not. With the one agency that I worked for, didn't tell me an awful lot about how much drinking they all did.
Yeah, I know.
How much fooling around was going on.
It seemed to be light.
But I learned a lot.
A question that I've thrown to many people that I've interviewed on this series is the question you've probably been asked a million times, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What advice would you give a young designer wanting to follow in your footsteps today?
Well, I have one slogan, which is work hard and save your money.
Yeah, I think that's a very wise one indeed. So what are you working on currently? You mentioned book in one place
children's books.
And illustrations in the other place.
Our book of posters came out, and next year will be a book that we did on hell, which was hell with people and places. Hell around the world. Steve Heller wrote the text for it, and I did illustrations of all these wonderful places. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that in actual print.
I mean, you've been connected with books for many years. Did you not? You set up a company at one point.
Well, we do. It was Pushman Press with Steve. There was another company with a couple other people.
I remember that series you did, large format, sort of trade size paperback, one on flowers, a whole series of four. They were very beautiful books. And I remember that triggered a lot of books over here in publishing, but exactly the same size, you know, published by various publishers here. But they're almost identical in shape, format, and I mean...
We did one on cats.
You did the illustrated cat.
The illustrated cat.
And that you did literary dog and the illustrated flower and the American T-shirt.
Yeah, literary dog was a normal size. Okay. We found out there were fewer dog readers than cat readers.
Going back a bit, sorry, you did have a moment when you joined forces with Alan Pekalik and formed Pushpin Lubalin and Pekalik in 1982. How did that work? I mean, because they're all quite different designers, and probably that's a good thing because you're all... did for Lou Dorfman, he would commission him to do some incredible complex lettering for programs and so forth.
Yeah, no, Herb did great alphabets.
How long did that last, that little
partnership? The partnership?
Yeah.
3 years.
3 years. You've relatively recently, I think, been doing a comic strip.
I did four graphic novels based on...
Was that for Bloomsbury?
Bloomsbury, yeah.
For Bloomsbury, okay. So they're relatively recent, aren't they? 2010? Well, I say recent, that's a decade ago, isn't it, already?
Yeah.
I can't believe how time flies so quickly.
It sure does.
Are you doing any more of those?
No. I'd love to do a couple more, but I haven't found publishers interested.
Pushpin Graphic, which you produced a book of the story of and all of the editions in the book, that finally ended, didn't it? And I think you went on to produce one or two other periodical things.
We finished the Pushpin Graphic. We found was too expensive to produce.
And quite a chore. I remember when I first contacted you back in 2004 about the Royal Designers thing, you sent me a whole stack of beautiful work, which I had very little to do apart from present you and then had the work on display. There was an overwhelming sigh of amazement.
Did I send you the nose?
You sent me the nose, yes you did, and many posters. I kind of treasure those because I never sent them back to you.
It's okay.
It's been a great delight talking to you, Seymour.
It's been fun.
Seymour Quast, thank you for sharing your RDI insights. Thank you very much indeed.